So actually, I think I'm going to give you guys a chance to ask some more questions, but I just want to throw one thing out first. Govindan, Stellamari was saying how this is a younger patient. She identifies with her. She actually put in her write-up that the patient gets anxious at time and texts her when she has new symptoms. I'm curious about how you approach, the issue of, the boundary between you and your patients.
Accessibility is important. These patients should be able to reach out to somebody, talk to somebody anytime that is they need the help. So my only problem with giving out the personal numbers and the access, I may not be readily available when they want it. And that also creates an expectation that becomes a problem. And this is a classical instance of everybody's equal, some are more equal than others. And we say we face that with our patients. After all, we are human beings and we do get quote unquote attached to some patients. So I think it's important to keep some boundary. Otherwise, number one, there can be profound fatigue. You take these things home, and you also don't serve your patients very well when you're too emotionally attached to that thing. So I try over the years, I've tried to create a boundary that way. I do the very best I can, but I just keep that at a certain level. So I would keep a uniform standard for access. Although now and then we have colleagues who work with us who are able to reach us more, that's a different story. But everybody else, I would treat them in a similar fashion so that they can access somebody all the time.
So Corey, actually, the video that I sent out for you to all to check out was about this project we did, and I know you were very involved with it, where we asked about 100 general oncologists to contribute cases to this case registry. Actually, it was lung, colorectal, and ovary of people who had died. So these are patients who died. And we went through the treatments that they got, how they tolerated, just basically listed them. We also asked them a bunch of supportive care questions, end-of-life care, et cetera. But the one that intrigued me the most was we said, how satisfying or unsatisfying was it to take care of this patient? This particular patient, remembering that that patient died. And what we found was that in 80% of the cases, the doc found it satisfying. And in fact, 42% of them, they found it very satisfying, which I think might be a little counterintuitive to people outside the field. But what is it that is giving that sense of satisfaction when you have a patient who dies?
Because you're doing your level best for these folks. And even if you haven't altered the disease course, you've dealt with their symptoms, you've initiated the supportive aspect of oncology in addition to the quote-unquote therapeutic aspect for the actual tumor. So my consolation is always that even if I haven't perturbed the natural disease course, I've done something tangible for their pain, for their shortness of breath. And knowing that I can at least ameliorate their symptoms, I think feels somewhat reassuring. And many times, and you see this, the patient's families are very grateful. You think, what did I do? Patient only lived 6 months. The disease course was relentlessly downhill. But we're the ones who knew what was going on. We were able to address and answer their questions. We were able to console them as disease progressed. And to be frank, most other non-oncologists aren't equipped to do this. So I think that is the source of the satisfaction. If I could just answer the other question
Sure.
too, my feelings have evolved about that. I used to create a tight firewall between me and the patients, but my card now has both my cell phone and my email. I'm very explicit with patients. I say, if you call me, it better be something very, very urgent. Do not necessarily expect to get me if I'm away or out of the country. I may not have no service. You can text me, but again, same parameters. You can email, but do not expect an immediate answer. It could be 2 days, it could be 4 days, it could be a week. If you have questions, itemize and bullet them, please, so I can answer each question. I set up very specific parameters, and patients will abide those parameters. And it's become a very useful mechanism of communication. There's one very important concern, however. All of this violates HIPAA, I've been told. Even because technically this is in cyberspace, people can intercept. From a personal standpoint, if the patient's initiated the conversation, I don't see how that violates HIPAA, but I've been told by multiple people who think they know that it does. So I continue to happily violate HIPAA in the interest of the patient's care and well-being. And anything that's an email can become part of the chart. We download it into Epic, and that communication is carefully curated, and once it's in Epic, anybody can read it.